I came home from work and he said, I'm leaving. I had absolutely no idea that this was going to happen. And if I said I was shocked to the core, he had met somebody and they had decided that they were going to set up home in the space of 8 weeks. And it was as if somebody had really just pulled a gun on the whole family and just gone all the way through the family. My children were completely shocked by this whole experience. I was devastated, and it was a very, very, very painful place for us to be. And I believe that Satan's strategy in this generation really is to attack families. And as family is something that God has used to model his church on, that affects us all. And that as family breakup and family breakdown and family remodeling changes, that we as a church have to be willing to embrace people from all different walks, because family's beginning to look very different to what it used to look like. I thought that it would be quite good that if we were, you know, looking at this in terms of going into battle, that every family needs a coat of arms. So I've pulled up the Francis coat of arms. This is quite new to me because I've only just recently joined the Francis family. I just thought, you know, in terms of a family coat of arms, what are the statements and things that we as families hold dear? Because they say so much about who we are, yeah? Here we've got liberty, equality and fraternity. And fraternity is just a group of people who have common thinking. It so happens that this is also the motto of France, believe it or not. But I looked at other family mottos and I came up with one or two others that I thought were quite interesting. Do you want to flick on, Graham? One here, go with the flow. Yeah? You know, just a little bit of Hakuna Matata, I think. We may have to agree to disagree. There's a lot of that in our household. This one, I thought of you guys, I've got to say. Always room for one more. This is off a coat of arms, by the way. Just the one. You get what you get and don't throw a fit. I thought that was pretty good too. Anybody know where this next motto comes from? Very, very famous. Come on, Matt. It is Latin. It is. Go on, flick on to the next page. Yeah.
I was going to say gladiator.
But you didn't, Helen. So he says, I am not led, I lead. Now, this is a bit of a personal motto. Some years ago, I got to know somebody at the last church that I was at, and big shifts and little shifts through some children's work that we were doing at the time. She became a Christian. She was the local drug dealer. She was also dying of emphysema. And I ended up having her baby living with me, and I fostered him for quite a long time, up to the point that she started to really deteriorate. And she died. And at her funeral, the song that she wanted was I Did It My Way. And I so wanted her to have I Did It God's Way, you know, because that's what it's about. You know, she'd come through. She'd accepted Jesus into her life, but she just hadn't quite pushed through and gone all out, all sold out. And the thing is, I believe that God doesn't want us to have a foot in both camps. You're either in or you're out. Yeah? When I was in that really, really dark place after my husband left, the only place that I could find real comfort, even when I was just going from job to job at work, was really saying the Lord's Prayer and walking it out. And I walked it out saying the Lord's Prayer as I was walking backwards and forwards and singing my heart out. The battle belongs to the Lord. In heavenly armour will enter the land. The battle belongs to the Lord. No weapon that's fashioned against him shall stand. The battle belongs to the Lord. You know, and it's a good old-fashioned hymn, but at the same time, it's something that I could stand on, that I could hold on to, and that I could really take with me. So before I was a Longdon, I was an Oliver. And these are the family mottos that are attached to the Oliver family shield. Go thou and do likewise. Well, that can be eye for an eye. Doesn't really mean anything. But then we start to get something that's a little bit more like, I rejoice in the house of the Lord. You know, that's where I want to be. Yeah, I want my family to be a house of the Lord, somewhere where the Lord can live. So, our family in the north, everybody has their name attached with the prefix of our. So in my family, there is our Karen, our Christine, our Richard, our Andrew. There's our Kate, there's our Joe. And I could keep going. So this is about our family. Yeah. Family's God's idea. It's not our idea. It's not my idea. It was God's idea from the beginning. So we are stuck with family. We have family for a reason. God said, you know, two shall become one and multiply. Yeah. I also believe that there should be a father in a family and a mother in a family. I know that I've felt at times that I've been trying to be mum and dad. And we can't do that. You know, I need to be mum to my kids. They have a dad. And for me, I want to really demonstrate Jesus in my family. Because if I'm demonstrating Jesus in my family, then there's something of Jesus being imparted to my children through that. And for me, my children aren't at a place at the minute where they know Jesus or want to have Jesus in a real relationship with them. So I will use words if I have to, because they don't want to hear it. Before my marriage broke down, I really had my husband on a pedestal, and he had become my idol. My family had become my idol. And that isn't what God wants either. And for a lot of people, two parents, two children and a dog isn't what it looks like. You know, the situation that we have now here is very, very different. But do you know what? We're all family. And we need to embrace the differences that there are amongst us. You know, and not make people feel that they are out on a limb or different or alienated for any reason, but actually really, really, truly welcome. You know, and it's hard to do that. Don't often put things up on Facebook. last year, Graham and I got married. This is the revised family. Yeah, we don't get here as often as we would like because our family has got bigger. Graham has four children. They all range in ages between 31 and 21. We are just coming to the baby boom years. Richard there, he's the one that's trying to look a little bit bigger. There's Joe, who's trying to look a little bit smaller. Richard's wife at the minute is pregnant with twins, and now 31 weeks, so it's getting closer. If it's one thing that's for sure, there will be a generation boom very, very shortly. We used our wedding as an opportunity to honour our family. It was something that God spoke very, very clearly to Graham and I about. I've had issues with my own dad in the past, and we decided that we were going to work through every issue, every difficulty, to make it something which was a family celebration. My dad took the service, and it was something that was really, really important to me and to Graham, because that was reconciliation, and that was God doing a massive work. Because families hurt each other. Sorry, it's obviously a little bit more emotional than I thought. But we need to focus on the great future that we've got ahead. Sometimes it's really, really easy to focus on what we're losing. For Graham, he's lost his house, his bathroom, his space, his garage, his freedom, control over the light switches. But look at what he's gained. He gets to be with me. Yeah. So we've got to invest in our family. God says home first. Yeah. It's no good looking further afield if we're not prepared to invest in our own families first. And a few weeks ago, Jonathan spoke about and used a picture of the retina of an eye as an indicator of the state of the heart. And I would say, if we're not praying for our own children, then actually that's an indicator that we're not quite where God would want us to be. Because, you know, it might not be necessarily about providing for things, but it's about providing that spiritual covering. Because Satan will come and will come in and attack families if we leave ourselves exposed, and we have to protect ourselves. Yeah, sorry. So here, this passage in Acts, I added this in because you've got Paul and Silas here who are praying and worshipping God. There's an earthquake. The gates fly open in the prison. And the jailer at the time is about to draw his sword and kill himself because he thinks that they've escaped. And suddenly realises that they're still there and falls down on the ground and worships them and says, "What do I need to come to know Jesus?" It says, "At that hour of the night, the jailer took them and washed their wounds. Then immediately he called all his household, that he and all his household were baptised." And here, I just want to say, really quite briefly, fathers, you've got a role. Yeah, fathers, you've got a big role. The role that a father has is just so important because you are chosen to lead the family. And the influence that you as fathers have on your families is he and his whole household instantly. You know, please rise up to that responsibility that you have in the family, because my children are crying out for a real relationship with their father because they want their father as part of their lives. So moving on, what is a family? In the dictionary, it talks about two parents with children who are dependent. So if your children are no longer dependent, they're no longer part of your family. Yeah. I think it's much, much more than that. And I think that, you know, we do have our nucleus family. You know, when your children are little tots, you are responsible for giving them their food. As they get that little bit older, they can get their own. And then maybe one day they'll bring it to you. We have a blended family. My family and Graham's family have come together. We do our best to blend. In the blending process, it can be a little bit fraught. It can be a little bit difficult. But family is what God has chosen to base his family on. You know, we don't have a choice. Do we have a choice? We don't have a choice whether we love our children. It's something that is an innate thing that is inside of us, usually. Things do go wrong within that. But, you know, just as we are called to love our own children, we are also called to love each other. Christ was chosen to be the bride of the church. That was from the beginning. He also said, imitate me as I imitate Christ. That was Paul. I want to imitate Christ to my children, to my family, to other people in church. And it also says that he will be reunited with us at the rapture. I think Karen mentioned that when she spoke the other week. I don't believe that marriage fails. I believe that we failed our marriage. And I would encourage anybody, if you are going through marriage difficulties, to get some help. Because God wants marriage. He honours marriage. It is his chosen purpose for us. So what happens when things go wrong? The hardest thing for us when my marriage broke down with the children was mealtimes. We felt as if a leg had come off a stool. Everything that we did felt unbalanced, and we hurt. We hurt to a point that my children asked if we could get a new dining room table that was round because it was too painful having a square table with one person missing. Graham now obviously lives with us, and we still have the same square table. We've all moved around. We all have different places. My children still feel it. God has given us amazing provision in what he has done. But the hurt's there, and the hurt needs to be dealt with, because if it doesn't, it festers on. You know, and as I've moved on and I've forgiven and I've moved on and met Graham, and Graham and I have a great time together. It's been very healing for my children, but there's still hurt there, and it's still difficult. Letting go of the past is important so that we can embrace the future. And sometimes it's hard to let go of the past. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to my son about divorce. The meaning of the word divorce means to cut a child in two. Yeah? And that's how a lot of people feel. You know, even into adult life, the damage that was done when we were tiny little tots, you feel as if you've been cut in two. And I believe that there's deep, deep hurt that God wants to deal with us here. Pretty much what Jared said earlier. I've moved on. Life with Graham is wonderful most of the time. I mentioned the machine gun effect, you know, all those years ago. We don't have that anymore, but occasionally we still have stray bullets. And the stray bullets, as a result of what I went through, still affect the whole of our family. And I'm sure that anybody who has been through a divorce and a marriage breakdown and relationships disappointments will find that, you know, you're going along great guns and you think that you've forgiven and you think that you've moved on, and then wham, you've got another bullet and it hurts. You know, and sometimes we have to go back to the drawing board and we have to start this whole forgiveness process all over again. And that's okay. it's right to do that, because pain, heartache, disappointments happen over and over again. If it was just one isolated event, it would be a lot easier to deal with. So we need to allow Jesus to embrace us. He's our father, he's our husband. Tina used to say to me all the time, "Christine, Jesus is your husband." Didn't quite get it to begin with. It took a long time for that one to go in. He's our provider, he's our friend, he's our shepherd. He comes and finds us when we're in a bad place. And you know, through that time, and every time that I've ever had a major difficulty in my life, I've had turbo faith. And it talks about faith as a gift of the Spirit. And I've had that. And it has been a gift, a package that I have been given, that I can say I've received that. Yeah. And even in the darkest, horriblest times, I have had the most amazing experience of the power and the presence of Jesus, and being able to get hold of that and touch it. And if you need turbo faith for a situation that you're facing, then you need to ask for it. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run into it and they are safe. For you have been my refuge, a strong tower against the foe. Throughout the Bible, there's reference over and over and over again of the strong tower, the cities of refuge, the places where we can go, the places where we can immerse ourselves, the place where we can get to feel that we are just completely, utterly safe. Going to flick on a bit, Graham. Miss the next slide. That's it. This is a picture of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge in Iceland. This is the point where you've got two tectonic plates that rub up against each other. And in families, there's conflict, unless your families are very different to my family. But there's conflict. And there's a little bit of rubbing up. And sometimes that erupts. In this case, it's a volcano. Graham and I got to walk along there when we were on holiday. It was just absolutely fantastic. There's tension. It's how we deal with that tension. Conflict can be good. You know, sometimes we run away from conflict, because it can be scary, but conflict can be good. Conflict exposes pain. And conflict can be healing if we deal with it in the right way. In the Old Testament, it talks about the cities of refuge. And this is the point where I wish I'd done the text a little bit bigger. Hang on. It says, Golan, Ramoth, Bozer on the east of the Jordan River, and Kadesh, Shechem, and Hebron on the western side. I wasn't joking when I said I need some new glasses. So what are the cities of refuge? The places that you could run to. If you accidentally murdered somebody, which you don't often hear about really, but If you accidentally murdered somebody, you had got access to a city of refuge, and you could stay there for the duration until the priest died, and then you could go back to your town. There's so much symbolism in the cities of refuge, and I'm going to have to miss a little bit out, I think, because I'm going to run a little bit out of time. But at each crossroads, there was a signpost that said, "City of Refuge this way." Yeah, so that if you were fleeing for your life, you knew which way to go. And my question to you guys is, when you meet people who are at a crossroads, where do you signpost them? Yeah, what are we saying? What happens if you don't make it? to your city of refuge. You're fair game. Anybody could take your life. So you'd got to get there as fast as ever possible and get in and get the gate shut. Yeah? My question is, are you in or are you out? Because either we're in Jesus or we're not. And actually, we know whether we're in or we're not. Yeah? When Graham and I have had an argument, he'll quite often say to me, are we all right? Yeah? We know whether we're all right or we're not all right. Yeah? If we're in Jesus, if we're in the place that we need to be, we know that we're in. And if you're not in, you're out. There's no foot in both camps. If you think about it, you know, a city gate going up, you cannot have a foot on one side and a foot on the other side. You're either in or you're out. So if you just flick back a little bit, something that I have just learnt is that all the cities of refuge had really, really specific names and specific meanings. And this is what you're running to. We're running to holiness, a shoulder, fellowship, a fortified place, exalted, and Jesus revealed. That's what we're running to. That's what we're hiding ourselves in. That's what we're immersing ourselves in. Here there's a picture of a bastle or a peel tower in the north of England. There's lots of these. My mum grew up in one of these. Fortified farmhouses where you lived on the top, you had your farm animals on the bottom. Along Hadrian's Wall, which is where my family originally came from, there were a group of people who lived along there called the Border Reavers that raided along the wall. And you needed to have your hatches battened down, because if you didn't, somebody would just come and ravage all over you. So it's the same with us. We have to get ourselves into that place where we are surrounded, where we are protected. In Hebrews it says, flee from condemnation, from the law, from the wrath of God, from the eternity of hell. Just as the cities were open to all who fled to them for safety, it is Christ who provides safety to all who come to him for refuge from sin and its punishment. I think we've got to stop filling up our too hard draw and start making up a give it over to Jesus draw. And the thing is that, you know, I put stuff in my too hard draw because I don't want to go there. And then I'll poke around in it as well, which makes it just a little bit worse. And actually, if we're going to give things over to Jesus, we've got to give things over to Jesus. And I think part of this message today is that there's no halfway house. You're in or you're out. You're with him or you're not with him. What are we running from? You know, my family's been through an awful lot. You know, and I've run away in all sorts of different ways from different situations, hurts and disappointments. Inside the family, outside of the family. For a long time, I found it very difficult to come into church because I felt judged. I don't think that was the intention of anybody within church, but it's the way that I felt because I was hurting. Every time anybody mentioned family, oh, that was like a dagger because my family was broken. And what about family secrets? Those things that nobody wants to talk about. You know, if we hide things and we bury things, then healing can't take place. There was an article that I nearly put up here that was asked what, it was somebody do a report. One word, what you think family is about. And it started off love, 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 love. And then very, very quickly it went to anger, pain, overbearing, controlling, get out quick, which is actually three words. Avoid at all costs, which is also not one word. But, you know, to different people, family means so much else other than, yeah, come be part of the family. Actually, family can hurt. We can hurt each other. And we have to apply the same principles to our own family and love our own family as we do into church and love each other. Because if we can't get that bit right, then we are not going to be effective in mission. Before Christmas, Graham had a secret. And I was on to his secret, but he wasn't going to talk about it. And I knew he'd got a secret because he started to lie to me. And I knew he was lying, but I couldn't quite weigh up to begin with what he was lying about. And it started, and I said, where are you going tomorrow? And this was on a Thursday night. And he said, I'm going to work tomorrow. I said, but you don't work on a Friday. And he said, work's messed up my holidays, so I've got to go on Friday to work. I thought, yeah, what's all that about? So I said, tell them you're not going. They've messed your holidays up, you're not going. No, 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 it's all right. Don't get wound up about it. I'm going to go. So off he went. The week after, I couldn't understand what was up with him. He was coming in from work and falling asleep. And he was just exhausted. And I knew he was up to something, but I couldn't quite work out what he was up to. And this went on. I later found out that he'd actually even been taking holidays and pretending that he was going to work. And he was going out with his work clothes on and coming back in time for tea so that he didn't have to let on what he'd been up to during the day. Now, somewhere in the middle of all this, I knew that there was a bit of a lie going on and I didn't really like it. And I kept just pushing a little bit because I was beginning to feel a little bit uncomfortable. He was beginning to feel a little bit uncomfortable and he was beginning to tell people at work that he felt that it was like he was having an affair. And he couldn't sustain it and he was going to have to come clean. What it was my Christmas present. And there we have it. Yeah. He'd been and bought a car off eBay, which he'd kept at his mum's. And he had been trying to do it up for me so that I could at least drive it on Christmas Day. She's commonly known as Miss Fire because she misfires quite regularly. And the secret was really beginning to rule and dominate his life. And it wasn't pleasant. To a point that he very nearly told me, yeah? It can be like that when it's something that you're doing that you're not supposed to be doing. You know, by the time Graham had finished, he'd got my son and his girlfriend roped into it as well. So this, you know, this plot was just beginning to thicken. And that's what we do when we're not in a right place. Yeah? Sometimes we can put a condition on a gift. Sometimes we give things to people. And when we are loving, we're saying you can have this, but you can only have this if you do it in this way. And actually, we very, very quickly get into quite a difficult area. And I've been challenged about how I love. I am told that I have a very sharp tone of voice. To me, it's normal. Choice of words. Just by changing one word, we can mean something very, very different. Body language. We can change a situation with body language very quickly. We can control with silence. We can bring awkwardness to a situation. And I know that I've done all of these. And the challenge for me is, how do I love people? And how am I going to love people? How am I going to love within my family? How am I going to love people within the church? And how am I going to love people out there? And the thing is, am I in Jesus or am I out? Because I can't be in and not want to change. So what about people that we don't like in church? Yeah, I just don't like them. I had a conversation about this a few weeks ago. You know, I just don't like them. Well, why don't you like them? I don't like them because of this, this, this and this. So you don't like them because you actually can't get your own way. And so often, the people that I don't like are the people that I have a bit of conflict with. Rub up the edges with. Yeah. And what about heaven? This has been a real challenge to me because, and you know, we talked about it in community group, and I admitted that, you know, for a long time as a Christian, I didn't want to go to heaven because I didn't want a lot of Christians there. Yeah. And God's challenged me about this because what right have I to be there if I'm going to say, but you're not going to go, you're not going to go, and you're not going to go? Yeah. And when I really started putting this together, God challenged me with how I love. And if we change this into the first person and say and question ourselves, am I patient? Am I kind? Do I envy? Do I boast? Am I proud? Yeah. Do I always honour others? What about self-seeking? Am I easily angered? What about keeping records of wrongs? Do I delight in evil? Do I delight in gossiping? Do I like the truth? Or do I straight away look for the bad? Do I protect? Do I tell the truth? Not always. Do I hope? Do I persevere? I have members of my immediate family that don't talk to me. How much do I persevere? I've been really, really challenged through doing this that I need to put so much more effort into praying for those members of my family that don't know Jesus, that I don't have a relationship with, because God says, love never fails. So it can't be there and me not want that. Am I in or am I out? Because there's no halfway house. Yeah, you can't have that door shut on you and you have a foot in both camps. You're in or you're out. If we're going to be effective in our own families, church and a mission, we have to be accepting and we have to be loving. Family's different to what it used to be. And we've got to embrace everybody that walks through those doors and find a way to love and to communicate. Some years ago, my father-in-law and I sat up into the wee small hours and had a real good heart-to-heart. And I can remember him saying to me, I love my sons, I just wish I could communicate it to them. And I said, well, try telling them that. And he said, I can tell you. I said, no, don't tell me. Tell them. He died a few weeks ago. He's never really told them that. I don't want to leave it too late. Yeah, we need to show people that we love them and we need to tell people that we love them. got a little video. Stumbled across this one rainy afternoon. And I just thought it summed things up a little bit. Okay. I'll do the summary and then we'll have the video because I'm conscious of time. Conflict in family is inevitable. Yeah. We need to love lavishly. And we need to run in the right direction. And in true BBC fashion, I've got a little slide at the bottom that says, if you've been affected by the content of this presentation and need support, please ask for help. Are you in or are you out? Because I want to be with Jesus. Are we going to play?
Dear Mrs. Doubtfire, 2 months ago my mum and dad decided to separate. Now they live in different houses. My brother Andrew says that we aren't to be a family anymore. Is this true? Did I lose my family? Is there anything I could do to get my parents back together? Sincerely, Katie McCormick. Oh, my dear Katie. You know, some parents, when they're angry, they get along much better when they don't live together. They don't fight all the time and they can become better people and much better mummies and daddies for you. And sometimes they get back together. And sometimes they don't, dear. And if they don't, don't blame yourself. Just because they don't love each other anymore doesn't mean that they don't love you. Now, there are all sorts of different families, Katie. Some families have one mommy, some families have one daddy or two families. And some children live with their uncle or aunt, some live with their grandparents, or some children live with foster parents. And some live in separate homes and separate neighborhoods in different areas of the country, and they may not see each other for days, weeks, months, or even years at a time. But if there's love, dear, those are the ties that bind. And you'll have a family in your heart forever. All my love to you, Poppet. You're going to be all right. Bye-bye.
That's me done. If you're hurting, then please ask for help. Please ask somebody to pray with you. If you don't know Jesus, now's the time, because you're either in or you're out. And Jesus wants you, and he wants to heal, and he wants to rebuild us, and he wants us to take that message outside.